Hey, Colin, how are you, man?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. Will you at least be my friend?
I can take it easy on you, yeah.
Okay, here we go. Well into April. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Inside Curling. Of course, we bring you all sorts of shows. Kev, we've been doing a bunch of special shows over the last couple weeks and few weeks and month. So we're back to our regular weekly show. We couldn't do it without all of you. Our listenership is growing all the time. We appreciate that and thank you. We couldn't do it without our two World Curling Hall of Famers, the one and only. Do you like to handle the goat, Kev? Who wouldn't?
Well, no, that's, well, you know, that's what mom and dad started it, so it's all good.
Yeah, good. The Bear, Kevin Martin, that's, and of course, better, our other World Curling Hall of Famer, Warren Hansen, who brings you all sorts of stuff each and every week. I'm always get excited, Warren, when you and I talk about the show, and I go, I think Hansen will have something to say about that. That'll be good. We no. couldn't do it without our sponsors. Thank you very much to Jackpot City, who brings you what is happening around the curling world. Coyote Tractor, the sponsor of Hot Rock Topics, and Goldline, who brings you in the house, our guest spot, and we have one today. Here's what's on the show. In the house, special guest Colin Hodgson has taken up a cause in up in northern Quebec at the Chisasabe community, indigenous community up there, about a really cool thing that he's done with curling and bringing it to that community. We're going to talk to him. Just a super cool guy. I talked to him a little bit before we did the interview. What's happening around the curling world? The World Mixed Doubles and Seniors Championships are underway in Östersund, Sweden, and we'll take a look at what's happening there. So that's actually three events, Warren.
It is three
men events, and women's yes. Seniors and the mixed doubles. The Canadian Stick Curling Championship took place in Toronto at the Leaside Curling Club, and we'll give you some results of what's going on there. Hot Rock Topics. We're going to look at a couple of emails, and then what are you hearing? We are hearing that some changes are being made at the top. Look at this, Kev. See this here? Some of these changes are a real head scratcher. I found my head scratcher. Okay.
Oh, God.
There's a real. Oh, I'm killing me here. You can do the same, Kev. You're as bald as I am.
Yeah, I can do the same.
Yeah. So we're gonna get into a bunch of that. If you haven't heard, there's been some big changes. Here we go. It's our favorite part of the show, baby. It's our guest spot. It's called In the House, brought to you by Goldline. Goldline Curling's impact rooms maximize performance for carry, hold, and carve. Learn more at goldlinecurling.com. Come on in. This is a special guest that we have because I saw it all week online about an event in Quebec. And I saw Darren Moulding was there, and I saw, I think, the Cooey brothers were there. And then Warren has set up a guest spot for us to tell us all about this really cool event in Chisasabe. Colin Hodgson is one of the many people behind it. Welcome to the show, Colin. This thing sounds like a beautiful deal that they did up there about leaving equipment and setting up curling. And boy, what an endeavor. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, this was a very special event. I came up here with Classroom Champions in November, and Brian Chick came along with me. So I'm a Classroom Champions mentor. So I get paired up as an Indigenous athlete with primarily Indigenous classrooms. And through Classroom Champions, we try to build out, healthy, active lifestyle programs for typically elementary schools. But this was a unique project that Classroom Champions is working on, was expanding in working more with the Indigenous community. So this was a unique thing that happened probably about a year ago. I got paired up with a youth center here. So normally it's actual classrooms, but this time, this was a youth center of, in this Cree Nation. And so we had Zoom calls, we had built out some programming, and whatnot. And I just really developed an incredible, connection and relationship with this community. So we decided, that I would come up and we would transform their hockey ice into just kind of a curling weekend with that youth center. And so when Brian and I came up, we made our rings with literal bingo dabbers, because we had heard that figure skaters, through the grapevine, we had heard figure skaters use that for marking, you know, jumps and things like that. So it worked out great. I reached out to a colleague of mine, Alana Rutledge, and she's in charge of Quebec curling. So she sent us up some curling stones in the fall, and we just really had a great time. And towards the end of it, we had this conversation about, like, what can we do more? This was a lot of fun. So that really got the ball rolling over the next probably 6 to 8 weeks of what do we want to do? And this was strongly led by the community. Rhonda Spencer, Roy Nicapo, Trevor Monahan, just amazing, amazing community leaders. And they said, you know, we do things well up here. We do things big. So let's think big. So, you know, they really put their best foot forward and said, well, who else can we bring? And it was really easy to start naming off Indigenous curlers, because curling has a really high percentage of Indigenous curlers across the country. They're, you know, in Winnipeg, there's the Aboriginal League. There's a huge Aboriginal bond spiel that I had been a part of. And it was just really nice to celebrate that. So we went big. We went really big. So I said, well, we have Kevin Cooey, we have Terry Galusha, we have Jamie Cooey, we have, you know, one of my all-time heroes, Al Hackner, we have Kerry Anderson, Patty Wallingham and Joe Wallingham from UConn, Mike McCarville, Carolyn McRory. So we have so many really high-profile athletes who have represented Canada on the world stage and their families and their communities. So it was a really easy decision to say, look, we've got 10 athletes. We can put together a great game. We could have had 8. We just wanted to have more and go as big as we can. So that's kind of where we started with the athletes and the impact that they've had in communities in the past, and wanted to celebrate that, but also bring in a whole holistic approach to it, where we're not just coming into this community once and we're leaving. That happens far too often, even through good intentions. So we said, no, we're going to make a really long-term plan. We're going to communicate with everybody, bring in so many different stakeholders in the sport worldwide. So I reached out to Curling Canada and got incredible support. Dr. Richard Norman was a huge influence on our decision-making and how can we have a lasting effect. I reached out to World Curling Federation, talked to Bo Welling and Colin Graham's Law, and there's just a huge appetite for building the game. So in my mind, this was a way that we can do that, again, in a holistic way, where we're not just going to a place and saying, here's curling, you know, hands off. This isn't just this happened in November, we're done, or this big event happened this week here, and we're done. It's, no, we're still looking forward, and how can we continue to have lasting impact and be leaders?
How did you pick Chisesabe and this Cree Nation? Is it something, you know, obviously this is something that you weren't sure where we're going. Now it's exploded. Was there no curling there at all? And you guys decided to pierce your way into that community?
The community contacted us. So this was fully led internally by this strong community that wanted, you know, better for their youth and to introduce more sport to it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So this wasn't, nobody really chose where this type of event was happening. This event actually evolved from relationships.
And how big is that town?
There's about 7,000 people in the community. This is a hub in the north. This is one of the largest communities up here, and it's 1,400 kilometers north of Montreal. So it's about a 16 or 17 hour drive to get here. Okay. So this is as remote as it gets.
And where do you live?
I live in Red Lake, Ontario. So I'm just across James Bay.
Gotcha.
As a crow flies, it'd be a 2-hour flight, but it took me 7 flights to get here.
I was going to say, oh, no. Oh, well, good for you and the dedication. Go ahead, Kev.
Well, yeah. Well, thanks, Colin. Obviously, you and I have been talking about this now for many months. And congratulations on how well it's went. So, Colin, obviously, this has went very, very well. I guess first question is the impact in the community. How many people have taken part in the various curling, if you want to call it a festival or activities or?
So what we did is we came in early and we got support from Chad McMullen in floor curling. So we made custom floor curling sheets. We did a full sheet. We went into all of the schools, so the elementary and the secondary school. So we taught every single gym class. So every single student who participated in a gym class last week learned the fundamentals of the game to understand how it worked. And then we had the feature game on Saturday. And now this week, we are bringing all those gym classes back and doing instruction. So Brian Chick has been leading that, and he's been doing an amazing job. He's actually out on the ice probably with 30 or 40 community members right now while we're doing this interview. But we had about 800 to 1,000 students come through, and we're probably in the 300 to 400 community member range, and this is only day two of the on-ice instruction.
Holy, okay. I had no idea that of that sort of magnitude. The building looks fantastic. So I can't wait for Inside Curlinville to put some pictures out to everybody and see what, well, Darren Moulding, of course, is doing your ice for you. Now, is there a teach? Now, I understand there's a teaching component as to how to play, but once you guys leave, is there a teaching component as to how to make the ice?
Yes. Yeah, so Darren came up, and he, throughout the whole process of ice install, ice maintenance, he taught, and they had a full arena ice technician crew. We did a little bit of documenting on video to show how it was built. But like I said before, the goal is to, of the legacy of this event, is to continue to communicate moving forward. So Darren's built an amazing relationship with these ice technicians. So I was just out on the ice, and they were running, scraping passes. They clipped before the evening draw came out. So I'm very confident that this crew knows what it's doing, and will continue to do that and teach other communities in the region. EUSG is a region of 10 Cree Nations up here. And the goal is to ensure that this whole region can transform their arena into curling ice when they want to.
I'm going to let Warren in here in just a sec, but the last question, I guess, is, okay, so this was in your brain here just a few months ago. So now it's come to fruition and it's worked out great. Okay. So the obvious question is, what's next? What's next for you? Because I know you don't really think in a small way. You might have been friends for 1,000 years since you ran across the snow from our hot tub and froze the bottom of your feet.
There we go.
And you and Kark were pretty young then. So we've known each other for a long time. You don't think in small ways. So what's next?
We're in the planning stages of that. We're going to take a moment to decompress and really reflect on everything that's happened. And there will be plans moving forward. Again, how can reinvent this or turn this into something more again next year? So we've got some ideas that we've tabled for a couple days, but we will go back to the chief and the deputy chief and everybody involved in this region. We will go back to Curling Canada and World Curling Federation, and especially all the athletes who are here, to get their perspectives on what should we do next. I don't think I have any of those answers, as this whole event was so collaborative. That's what needs to happen, is it needs to evolve into something else to continue to have more impact.
Thanks for joining us, Colin, and congratulations on your event. It looked really good. As Kevin said, I saw a lot of photos on social media, and it was pretty interesting. So obviously this required a fair amount of funding, and it's going to require funding going forward. Where does it come from? Is it federal government, Sport Canada, Curling Canada? Where did the funding come from to do all this?
This was all self-determined. We ensured that we got support from areas and we weren't wasting anything. So Curling Canada, for example, they sent up a scraper and blades and ice making equipment that maybe we didn't need in the short term, but it's something that we really needed for this event to ensure it was successful. Most of the backing for the event was from the community and to really introduce a sport. So they've invested in themselves. They brought us all along to bring our personalities and charisma. And I think that's gone a long way into finding new networks. So now with these athletes, we have tapped into their networks with Curling Canada, World Curling Federation. And Kevin, yourself, you helped us tremendously in creating these beautiful houses and ensuring that we got them here on time. So now that we were successful here and we're on the map, there are people starting to reach out wanting to help, big organizations. Canadian Tire Jumpstart heard about what we were doing and they supported us financially. We had support from TD Bank, who does business here as well. So we have a little bit of, partnerships, but for the most part, it all came from the community.
Let's talk about minorities in curling. And certainly, I live on the West Coast. In Vancouver and Vancouver proper, we have extremely large Asian, South Asian populations. You see some of them curling, but generally speaking, not a lot in proportion to the numbers that live here. What's needed to get them more involved in the sport?
Yes, I'm happy you asked that question. What I believe is that curling comes from Scotland. Curling is a colonial sport that was brought here during our history. And I believe personally, the way we've looked at curling is through a needle point of how we play the game. We have all these rules. It's a rectangle. You know, it's 114 feet between the buttons, give or take. Kevin will know that better than I. But yeah, we've looked at curling so linear for so long. What I believe needs to happen is when people come into the building who aren't from the current curling culture, they don't see themselves. They don't see a future. They don't see hope for themselves in that. So it takes a lot of gumption. It takes a lot of courage to come into a building that is not really designed for them. So the more we can reinvent curling and think about different ways that different communities can participate, the game itself can evolve. So in the Indigenous community, circles are very important. When we're talking about circles in a rectangle, why don't we think about different things like coming at it from a different angle? Maybe we don't have to play the sport exactly the way we always have. And I think that'll increase participation.
Yes, it's a challenge because certainly I know in this area, if the sport's going to thrive and survive, that has to change because there's already been many curling clubs lost in this area over the last 10-year period. And so it's got to change.
To echo your point there, I'd like to just add one thing is I've traveled a lot in the United States and arena curling is booming.
Yeah.
We've shown here that we can do arena curling in multiple ways. We can take bingo dabbers and it can still be a blast, or we can do a full, beautiful arena setup, you know, like a world championship. So I think leaning into the arena side of things, we've got way more arenas and skating pads than we have curling clubs.
Yeah.
So if we can find a way to package this together and find a way to make it affordable and to really just have the know-how and teach areas how they can do it, then you can have curling in very remote places because they already have arenas.
Interesting, good point. We never have in this country utilized the arenas, the hockey arenas for curling, and we certainly could. So you've been out of competitive curling for a year. Whole bunch of changes going on this last few days. Any desire to come back?
No, I've got a few phone calls and a few texts, but I'm happy where I'm at. I'm very happy where I'm at. I'm getting a lot of fulfillment from the sport in a different way. So I started to really hate curling, to be honest, later in my career. And it wasn't the people, it wasn't the game. It was, you know, spending all the time, spending 22 weeks on the road away from my family. I've never had a normal life. I curled competitively for 21 straight years, and this was the first year off. And I needed to take a step back to get that perspective. I'm happy that I actually feel like I can still do it, which I didn't want to go out in a way where I wasn't capable. So I'm happy with my decision, and I'm looking forward to seeing where this new path is going. I've been fortunate that Darren and Team India asked me to help develop a performance program for the country. So that's very exciting, and it is time consuming as well.
I'll tell you who's happy about your decision is the curling world. Man, oh man, what you've been tapped on the shoulder by the curling gods to take up this cause, Colin, and what a fantastic thing you're doing. A couple of things before you go. I don't know why I keep thinking this, that it's a program designed for the youth. Is it strictly to develop youth curling, or is it for everybody when you go into these Indigenous communities, in this case up there in Quebec? Who does it all encompass?
It is for everybody, absolutely. But when you look at the statistics, the Indigenous community is growing at a faster pace than any other community in the country. This community specifically has an incredibly high youth population, which is close to 2/3 of the community is youth. So when we are doing it for everybody, that means it is primarily for youth. For our youth, for our Indigenous youth, there's not a lot of options for different sports. So it doesn't really matter if it's curling or hockey or baseball or broomball or any sport, sport just means there's hope. So when people see representation at a high level in any sport, it gives the youth a chance to say, look, to realize that this can be me, so I'm going to strive for it. What we're doing with sport is just promoting hope. At the end of the day, I think that's more important than winning or losing curling games on the ice.
Yeah, nothing like this ever happens unless there's someone who takes the bull by the horns, who takes the lead rein, and clearly this cause is in really good hands. It needs someone who's passionate, and there's no doubt you're the guy for that. I'll tell you what, where Warren perked right up when you said, we don't need to curl the same way the game's always been. That is music to Warren's ears, okay? Warren's been pounding that for a long time about changing curling. So, Colin, thanks so much for coming on. The show's called Inside Curling. This is a beautiful inside story. Congratulations on all you're doing. You should be really proud. And thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Colin.
Well, I'll tell you what, boys, like I said, for someone to take up these causes, you need someone who's super passionate. Kev, I didn't know you've known him for such a long time. He, to me, sounds like 100% the right guy to be doing this.
Oh, yeah. No question. Oh, yeah. It goes all the way back to, I think that was when Clark only played 1 year at junior curling because he's always involved in hockey, and he curled with Colin. Oh. So that's how they got to know each other. And then, of course, over the years, we just got to be friends. And then Colin's been, he's a really, really intelligent person who works extremely hard, maybe too hard. He would probably admit to that, but he really feels passionate about this and growing the game in a new area and new people. And by the sounds of it, I had no idea after day one, it was somewhere around 1300 people already that have tried curling. That's only day one. Wow. I don't know.
And there's only 5,000 people there.
Yeah, it's only 7,000.
I guess all 7,000 are going to play. So fantastic. You know, Colin phoned me. It must have been four, five, 6 months ago about this. And I, of course, offered right away to help. But he's doing a heck of a job with it.
Warren, we got listeners from around the world. I can't help but think, Warren, when people hear this interview with Colin, that they're going to, in any community, not just indigenous communities, that people are going to go, holy man, that guy's onto something. What do you think, Warren, when you hear it?
Well, I think the one thing he's opened up is the fact if you have an ice hockey rink in your area, then this is possible. And certainly that's become a big item in the United States. I think, Kevin, just in the last week here, they played their national arena championship. And I mean, it's so big in the U.S., they have a specific championship for curlers that play only on arena ice. And I think with
the non-dedicated ice.
Non-dedicated
ice. The building is not dedicated, right.
I think with the growing surge that we have of people having an interest in this sport, that has to be probably considered more than it probably is of using hockey arena ice. And even within Canada, which has never been done to any degree to my knowledge, I can remember playing up in Jasper years ago and a big bonspiel that they used to have every year. And they always put 5 sheets of ice into the arena. And that's the only time in my history of curling in Alberta I can ever remember that happening. That was just for normal bonspiel and curling. They went into an arena. Anyway, good stuff.
Yeah, excellent stuff. All right, time for what's happening around the curling world, brought to you by Jackpot City. Jackpot City casino games perfectly made for you. Okay, Warren, those three events we talked about, the World Mixed Doubles and the Men's and Women's Senior Championship, taking place at the same place at the same time in Sweden.
Yes, in Östersund. So let's talk about mixed doubles first and the fact there's 20 nations participating. They're divided into two pools, 10 teams in each pool. So let's take a look at what's happened so far in the A pool. At the top, a familiar name, Yannick and Breyer Schwaller-Herlemann, Switzerland, 5-0. In second place, probably no surprise either, Stefani Constantini and Francisco Dezana, Italy, 4-1. And then four countries at 3-2, Estonia, Germany, Japan, and Norway. In Pool B, Canada's on top, Katrina Lott and Colton Lott, 4-0. But guess who's right behind them? They're not behind them. They're tied with them at 4-0, Isabella and Rasmus Rana, another family,
take family it easy participation. On us,
and behind them, some other household names in curling. At 3-1, the USA, Becca and Matt Hamilton. So that's who's leading the pools at the moment. They'll continue round-robin play over the next few days. And then when they're completed that, six teams will make the playoffs. The top team in each pool will go directly to the semifinals, while the other four will play off to see who the opposition is going to be for the two teams who have already made it in. In the World Seniors, on the women's side, they're playing in three pools with six teams in each pool. And in this case, the top eight will advance to a sudden death playoff. Canada is skipped by Susan Froud from Ontario. They are currently in first place in Group A with a record of 3-0. In second place is Japan at 2-1, as is Lithuania. Group B, Sweden's at 3-0. Hong Kong's at 2-1, along with Latvia. Group C has Scotland at 3-0 and England at 2-1. So that's what's happening on the women's side. On the men's side, there's a few more teams. They have four pools with six in each. Same as the women, though, the top eight will advance to a sudden death playoff. Canada is in Group A. Paul Fleming from Halifax, a familiar name to both Kevin and I for many years. He has a record of 3-0. He's followed by Denmark and Norway, both at 2-1. Group B has Germany at 3-0. Ireland's at 2-1. Group C has Switzerland at 3-0, along with the USA. And Group D has Czechia at 3-0, along with Sweden. So that's what's happening over there in Östersund, and that'll continue until next weekend in both the mixed doubles and the seniors competitions.
Good stuff. When's my Ireland going to start to bust through, Kevin? All right? I want some Ireland up there, man.
That's right. We need to get the Irish blood going. That's right.
I think the interesting team in this in the women's side is Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. I can never recall them having a team. It's a 2-1 is why mm-hmm. I brought it up. So that's interesting.
Yeah, and seniors. Like, where have they been seniors, the last 30 years?
Yeah.
Cool. Good for them. Kev, thoughts?
Yeah, no, well, not, obviously the cream's rising to the top in the mixed doubles. That's understandable. So many names, though, that are just household names in our sport that go from the four person. Now they're playing the mixed doubles end of the year, which is great. Seniors, when Pyeongchang last year, where the seniors was, we actually spent a couple evenings over at the seniors rink. It was only just across the parking lot from the Olympic venue. That's where the Olympics were in 2018. Boy, do they have fun. The senior championship is a blast. So, all of those teams would be having a great time. And Paul Fleming, that's a pretty good leader from the Canadian side, I'd say.
Seniors curlers having fun. Duh.
Exactly. Just have a great time. Yeah.
When are you going to get there, Martin? You got to take up some senior curling. You're not that old. You're old enough.
Hold on. I'm definitely old enough to curl seniors. Yeah.
He's waiting for the masters.
No, and then you could coach Warren.
I'm going in a stick curling gym.
Okay. Speaking of that, good segue, Warren. God, you're brilliant. That's a beautiful segue. The Canadian Stick Curling Championships concluded in Toronto on Sunday at the famous Leaside Curling Club. Who do we got, Warren? Who's winning? Who's losing?
Well, let's first talk about, when we talk about stick curling, what this is. It's two-person stick curling, which we've talked about this in our show a few times. It originally was developed as Stirling. It was to involve a man and or a slider and a stick player, but they've now adopted it to two-person stick. It's seeming like it's become the way it's going to go. And it's six ends, six rucks, and you are positioned at one end. You never go to the other end, except you can go halfway down, and it's very quick and I think probably a lot of fun.
How long does it take to play a game? Six ends, six rocks like that?
You know, I'm just guessing, but I wouldn't think it would be much more than an hour. I wouldn't think.
Yeah, I was thinking too. It'd be fun, just quick nice. And yeah, nice.
Yeah, we'll have to get Jim out and we'll go at it.
It'd be more than an hour.
Anyway, they had two divisions. They had a women's division and they had an open division. So on the women's side, the gold medal winners were Carolyn Watt and Nancy Shepherd from Ontario. The silver winners were Audrey Dory and Betty Madison from Nova Scotia. And the bronze winners were Gail Hayes and Karen Jay, also from Nova Scotia. In the open division, which was men and women, or two men, two women, I think pretty much as you choose. I'm guessing at that, but I'm assuming that's the way it was. So in the open division, Warren Johnson and Dan McDonald from Manitoba were the winners. It's the second time that Warren Johnson has won the gold medal. In the silver, Keith Bennett and Paul Landry from Nova Scotia. And in the bronze, Ruby and Randy Olson from Alberta were the winners. So, interesting thing developing. Pavi, who we've talked to before from the Lee side, and Keith Kadish with her today, she told me she was surprised at how many people in Western Canada are playing this, and it really has never been a big issue, even in their club in Leaside, but they're certainly going to look at it next year. And again, we've talked about this many times. I think this is a sleeping giant. I think two-person stick can become a huge, huge part of curling, and it's going to, because it's so easy for people to quickly learn how to get some positive feedback from it. And
easier, right,
yeah,
for the old.
And I think as it gets rolling, it's really going to grow. Kevin?
Yeah, without question. No, there's no question. It's about an hour-ish to play a game. Very fast, very active, terrific when you get older. And two people on team. It's easy to get out there and enjoy yourself. And then, of course, have your beer, your glass of wine when you're done, which is very important too. I agree with you, Warren. When you look at, so you walk out at the Saville, say, it's always full, the seniors leagues in the morning. You know, maybe a quarter of the people have sticks or you know, a lot, quite a few have sticks. Why not have a stick league where it's all sticks? It really makes sense to me rather than trying to meld the two, because they are quite a different game. The using a stick or not using a stick is quite different.
Well, there you go. It's like, you know, the day you finally decide, Warren, to move up to the white tees in golf, and then you go, I should have done this 6 years ago. It's like that in curling, right, Warren?
You're not at the gold tees yet, Jim?
No, God, no. Yeah, I've come to realize I'm a terrible golfer. There you go. There's a good wrap-up what's happening around the curling world. Let's move along. Hot Rock Topics, brought to you by Coyote Tractor. If you have work to do, Coyote has the tractors, UTVs, ZTRs, and compact construction equipment to do it. Coyote, we dig dirt. Let's go to an email from Pat and Rob Firminger. So they imagine four hands on a keyboard typing out the email together, eh? The two of them. The breakup of the Botcher team, head scratcher, happened this week. It was a surprise. It sparked a lot of interesting discussions, from support for players changing teams to be successful for the next Olympics, to comments that players should stick with their same team. It takes time, man, to coalesce and achieve the best performance. With the change in the Botcher team, what happens with the pre-qualifier spot for next year's Montana's Briar? Does Brendan Botcher continue to hold this spot? We got to figure that out. Thanks, as always, for such an informative, entertaining show. That's from Pat and Rob Firminger. The Botcher announcement was kind of different, that the three other positions, Hebert, Gallant, and Kennedy, made this statement first, and that it wasn't. I said, this is kind of interesting. Usually would have all four of them saying, here it is, we're moving along. But let's start with you, Kevin.
Yeah, you know, that's what I thought right away too, is it okay? Changing teams, that's fine. Yeah. There's got to be a reason. Nobody really knows the background is why the reason, but that's, you know, that's just the way it is. But to have a press release where you didn't hear from Brendan, well, yeah, if he's not part of it, then obviously right away everybody goes, what's going on?
Sure.
He's not part of it. So that was a mistake made by the rest of the team, not to involve the person who you're not going to be curling with next year. That should have been all part of the same release, obviously. So that's caused a bit of a commotion, at least with our social media, Warren. Our Facebook's been off the charts with this. Mark tried to come in and settle the waters, but the waters ended up being a tsunami after that.
Oh, really?
Well, people have attitudes.
It didn't smooth the waters.
No. Always fully informed. Doesn't matter.
What did he do?
Well, it was just funny. So remember when Brad was on our show?
Yes.
And yes. And I said, and just having fun with him, because of course Brad and I are really good friends. Well, the whole crew, all of these people are really good friends of mine. And I just said, well, it's your fault. And then remember, Brad's going like, what? What do you mean? And then he thought about it. I suppose I am. Like, because, of course, he keeps winning all this stuff.
Right.
So
right.
He's causing the breakups and people having to try to figure out, how do you beat this guy? Well, it ended up kind of going a bit sideways in the social media. People not reading, because we had a post that said that. Whose fault was it? Well, all of a sudden, of course, people not listening to our podcast, knowing that, well, that was all in jest.
Sure.
But of course, here we go, forest fire on the social media. So it's a fiery conversation. I don't do Facebook usually, but Shauna said, Kevin, you got to come and read some of this stuff. So I probably read, 100 posts. Like, but there's thousands. I don't know how many there is, Warren. You'd know. It's crazy.
Question that was asked here by Pat and Rob was, what happens to that team now who already had earned their right to play in the Brier next year? And so if you go back to 2015, the first year ever of Team Canada, Kevin Cooey won the Brier in Kamloops and went to the Worlds in Beijing. However, they were known before they left for Beijing that Kevin was going a different direction. And so the other three guys were left. They picked up John Morse, and of course they went on to play in the Brier in 2015, and a rather strange outcome because John started skipping in the Brier, and about Tuesday they switched to Pat Simmons, and they won the Brier. So the situation is that, yes, the Botcher team, without Botcher, will in fact be able to go forward. And I'll say this, and Kevin can correct me. As far as I know, the CTRS points are divided equally between the four players, I do believe. Is that correct, Kevin?
I believe that is true.
Yeah,
I believe that's true. So then, but then bring on Brad Jacobs into the mix. His points come too, so it's almost a non-issue that way. But we'll have to see where Brendan lands, and we'll know that, well, really quick, within the next day or two, I understand. But we don't want to let any cats... I don't want to let any cats in any bags. That's going to be a special show, everybody. Coming up fairly darn soon. Yeah.
I want to speculate. I love speculating.
Well, we can speculate. Sure, we can speculate.
What about Carruthers?
Well, we don't know yet, but we're going to talk about that, Jim, over in the next segment.
All right.
You keep jumping page, Jim.
Well, it's sort of a professional segue. You got to juke and jive. You got to be able to move fast on your feet.
Muhammad Ali.
Okay. Good, then. I've got a lot of speculation in the next segment. I'll tell you that. All right, well, let's do it then. Let's get to the next segment, okay? I got a bunch of stuff to weigh in on. What are you hearing? Oh, we're hearing a lot. We're hearing a lot of chatter about the team changes that were announced last week. We know there's going to be more to come. For sure, we know Brad Jacobs will be skipping Mark Kennedy, Brent Gallant, and Ben Hebert. We've heard that Chelsea Carey is going to skip the Jennifer Jones team. We also heard today that Lisa Weigel is coming out of retirement to play with Laurie St-George in Quebec. How could we not mention that Wiley veteran Glenn Howard has decided he's going to play another 42 years? You heard it here first. He's announced he's finally retiring. Where's the fire, Glenn? Come on, man. You're just getting rolling. Don't retire now. I kid Glenn. I know him well. But where is Brendan Botcher going to end up? And who will Reid Carruthers replace Brad Jacobs with? And much, 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 much more. So, Kev, let's start with you. There's a lot to unpack.
Oh, where does everybody end up? Well, Glenn Howard, yeah, his knee is sort of messed up. So we'll get him on the show here in the next couple, 3 weeks and just see what's going on there. Because, that's somebody that people have cheered for forever in the sport of curling. And just a real legend and an ambassador for our sport. So, sorry.
Well, he hasn't curled in 2 years, but he's been part of a team.
He's been doing really well.
Yeah.
So it'd be great to talk to him. I will reach out and get Glenn on the show. But there are a lot of changes, but that's not uncommon when you're trying to find a way to get on the podium. That's what that's what this is all about. We've got the best players in our sport, and they go, after a year's done, they go, you know what? I don't know. I don't know if we're going to get on the podium with this exact team. I think we need to make a change. We got to do this or this or this. And you just do it because you need to somehow, as an athlete, try to get on that podium. It's really important as far as your competitive nature. It's just the way it is. So none of this is really surprising. It's just a matter of finding out where everybody ends up. And then we can speculate, Jim, as to why did they do it? What are they thinking? What are the assets of the team, and why do they think now they're stronger than they were before?
Yeah. Before I get to Warren, Kevin, how many times did you switch it up?
Oh, boy. How many seconds?
Oh, is that right? Eh?
Yeah, we were laughing last night. So let's, I'll never get this right, but Dan Petrick was with me for a long, long time. Great friend, still a great friend. Best man at my wedding. He actually wrote "help" on the bottom of my shoes.
Oh, beautiful.
So then when we knelt down, knelt down, the whole crowd saw "help" I love across that gag. My shoe. Yeah. Anyway, it was a good gag. Yeah, you got me good. But anyway, Dan Petrick. And then when Dan, I'll try to get it right, but it was a lot of seconds to just, you know, get it through. I don't even know how many it would have been. But right. Then actually whole teams, not that many thirds, maybe four or five thirds. Not many leads because Donnie B was with me forever. And then Benny Hebert. So not many leads, but quite a few thirds and many, many, many seconds.
And were you doing it at the, always like you just said, to shape up for the Olympics when you went into Vancouver?
Just trying to
build,
just trying to get better. At the start, of course, there weren't Olympics yet. Right. 98 was the first medal. Like we were in the 92 Olympics as a demonstration sport, but the first time curling was a medal sport was in 98. By then, I was getting, you know, fairly old by 1998. So yeah. That's kind of why you would do these changes to try to build and get to be better. One quick story. Rudy Ramshran, who's been on our show last year, he was the only one that quit my team. So he was my neighbor, maybe up two blocks away, and wanted to come over for a drink. Yep. So no problem. So he comes over to have a cocktail and all good. And he says, "Skipper, I quit." I said, "What?" We had just won the year before. We'd set the record at Donnie Beal. Correct me because I'm always wrong with this stuff. I think it was $315,000 in prize money, and then the sponsorship. We'd won both skins games and two flexicoils all in a 12-month span. So I'm going, "Rudy, you're crazy. Why would what are you talking about? You quit? This is too hard to work. The way you go at this is stupid." So I'd pick him up every day, and we'd practice every day. And then take him home. And then, you know, that was a routine. I'd pick him up in my car and he was trapped with me to practice. And we'd practice every day. Well, he's a very good curler and a great touch. And you know, but he did not want to work at curling to that degree. So he actually sat at my table and he quit the team. He said, "I'm gone. I'm out of here." And we're still best of friends. But yeah, that's a true story. But that's what it was all about, building a team that could beat the powers that be at the time. It was over many, many years. So, you know, the powers that be kept changing.
God, that's like going to Wayne Gretzky saying, "I don't want to play in your line anymore."
Well, shocked the hell out of me. It was funny, but because we had just had the year, I don't even know what year it was, but a heck of a year where we won both skins games and then two flexicoils, and those were 60,000 first prize each. And the skins were about the same, 60 and right. 50, something like that. So it's just hilarious.
Warren, we know it's household stuff now that everyone's changing teams a lot, often, not uncommon at all. What about in your day, Warren? Did guys move around a lot?
Oh, yes. This is nothing new. And in my day, it was always you're trying to build a team to get to and win the Brier. And out of Alberta in those days, it was more get to than to win. Yeah. So there was constant shifting taking place. And I can remember one situation where it was quite startling in December of the year where a person who was playing second on a pretty good team, skipped by a guy's name was Gervais, decided he didn't want to play second anymore and quit and moved to another team to play third. And the interesting thing was Hector was left. He had to pick up virtually the guy that got cut off the team that the other guy was going to, and he picked him up. He really wasn't a second, but they went to the Brier. So it was a different time, but it's always difficult. I mean, I was just sitting here thinking, I don't think I was ever cut from a team, but I did leave a number of times from teams.
No.
And went in a different direction. So it's nothing new. It's been going on forever. It's just a fact, I think, today is difficult in curling because there's no coach for the most part. And so to a very large degree, the skip kind of becomes the guy that has to do most of this stuff. And maybe sometimes it's one other player or some cases two others. But it always, I think, in curling causes people to ask questions because there's no coach. If there was a coach, you'd just say, okay, coach has made a decision. But as Kevin suggested to start with, I think a good benchmark for all these teams when they're doing this kind of stuff, that they should come out and make the announcement with all four guys. And then the finger doesn't get pointed at anybody specifically. And it's just saying, we've decided we're not going to play together anymore, certainly not with the unit that we had. But I want to mention Glenn Howard for a minute, because we touched on him, but as to the remarkable record this guy has. So he's played in 20 Briars. He's won 4 Briar titles and 4 world titles, 2 as a third and 2 as a skip, and 12 Grand Slam titles. But what's more amazing here, if you dig deeper, Glenn Howard has 7 Briar silver medals. He finished 2nd in the Briar 7 times. And he has 1 trials silver medal that Kevin remembers very well from 2009. So never mind what he's won. Look what he's coming almost winning. He could have, in essence, ended up with 11 Briar titles. He was that close.
Wow. And I bet some of those games were close.
I was thinking about that today when I was looking up the things about him. I remember one unbelievable game. This is the year Kevin won the Olympics. And so for the first time ever, Kevin Cooey won Alberta because he didn't have to play Kevin. So the final of the Briar in Halifax is between Kevin Cooey and Glenn Howard. In the final 2 ends of that game, I remember shots made by both these guys, and it went an extra end, were unbelievable that was made by both of them. And for Kevin Cooey to finally make that big jump, I think he had to throw a final shot within about 1 inch of where it had to be to win the game. And, of course, that's what got him rolling down the road. That was his first victory. So a lot of those games, I think, as I remember, Kevin, that trials in 2009, that was right down to the wire too, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Great game in front of a huge crowd, minus 52 outside. I'll never forget that. Oh, God,
I was there. Yeah, I was there. Kevin Cooey listens to our show, Warren. I can't wait till he just hears that you said the only reason Kevin Cooey won that bar is because Kevin Martin wasn't in it.
Well, it's funny how that seems to go. You know, the team goes and goes and goes. They can't get over that hump, and then they get over it, and all of a sudden they start winning. Look at Brad Gushue. He won his first Briar in 2017. Right. And now he just keeps winning Briars. Right.
Yeah, it took him a while.
Took him about 15 years to win one, and then he can't stop winning them.
Right. Good point. Well, there you go, folks. Another show in the books. That was good. Good stuff. Yeah, speculation. Yeah, rumor, innuendo, all that stuff. I love these sort of shows. Thank you very much. Thanks a lot to Colin for coming on. What a great cause he has taken up. We also want to thank Rod Paulson from In-House Strategies, who handles every week, and he does it diligently all day long. He looks after our Facebook and our Facebook group. If you're not a member or if you haven't joined, sign up. Send us an email. We do it each and every week, man. We get a bunch of them, and we love to read them. InsideCurling@gmail.com. InsideCurling@gmail.com. Thank you to Jackpot City, Coyote, and Goldline, who make all of this possible. And Warren, it's the start of the hockey playoffs. I gave you a golf update last time, and you gave me shit at the start of the show, so I'm waiting till the end of the show. Our Oilers are teeing off in about 3 minutes to start their playoffs, and your Vancouver Canucks... Warren won the first game.
Yes, you should be in Vancouver today. You'd think they just won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I bet. No kidding. Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah, and the Jets and Vancouver and the Oilers, Toronto. Maybe this is the first year in 1,000 years a Canadian team win the Stanley Cup.
You know who's spending a lot of time in church these days? Gary Bettman praying that only one Canadian team could be in the Stanley Cup final, not two, and preferably none.
Yeah, unless it's Toronto. He might be okay with Toronto.
Toronto, but the rest of them,
Yeah, a Winnipeg team in the final, you'd be like, oh, no. Yeah, it's about a tenth of our audience. Anyway, enjoy all that this week, folks. We'll be back next week with another episode of Inside Curling. Where's Botcher going to end up? Where's Botcher going to end up? Maybe we'll have an answer by next week. Kevin says in 2 days we'll know. Kevin says we'll know in a couple of days. Take it easy, boys. See you, Warren. See you, Kevin.
Thanks, Jim.